Mr. Lazenby, Reel 11.
During this period, that is the early 20s, was there much lower deck activity to improve pay and service conditions?
I don't remember any. There was a publication called The Fleet that used to take up the cause of the sailor, but I don't know whether it ever accomplished anything much. You see, I remember the time when even after I was married, do you remember the Geddes Axe? And that came down with a chop. And our pay was reduced. And I had just got married and taken off a life insurance policy. And I couldn't keep it up because I had to allow my wife a certain percentage of my pay. So I either had to chop her allowance down or get rid of the policy, so I had to get the policy paid up. And she hadn't enough to live on. I forgot how much she gets, about 28 shillings a week to keep herself on, later children.
But you never came across what one might call trade union type activity?
No, never.
Right. Now, you had your first spell in barracks at Chatham in 1923 after you returned from the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
What was life like in the barracks generally?
Very strict and very proscribed, I mean. And there were facilities there that we didn't get ashore, but the messing was entirely different. I'd been used to canteen messing. I came into the barracks where it was general messing. And the food was adequate, but it was never properly cooked or dished up. And I can understand it now as I look back, and my subsequent experience teaches me that the cooks had a shocking job to do. When you think of 6,000 men, 6,000, all wanting breakfast at the same time, three galleys to do it. They all wanted boiled eggs at the same time for breakfast. How would you do it? They all wanted fish and chips for supper. How would you do it? I remember once, this was during this last war, I was called up and went to Chatham Barracks, and we had fish and chips. And the refuse bins were not bins, they were a brick wall about 4 feet high and about 8 feet square with a drain in the middle to drain all the liquids off. And I remember once seeing this full up with fried fish. And a civilian workman came and he complained to me. He said, look at that. He said, I can't get a bit of fish anywhere. He said, and you're wasting it like that. I said, friend, if you'd had that for your supper last night, you would have thrown it away because they started cooking it the previous evening. And so the food was practically unpalatable in some instances. Sometimes it was all right. Some of the things that couldn't go wrong on. But when it was cooked, and cooked a long time beforehand, it was practically hopeless. The messing was not intimate like it was on a ship. You were messing in a great big mess room with strangers that you'd never seen before, and you weren't likely to spend long with them because you're always coming and going. The routine itself was, I think, degrading.
In what way?
Well, because, for instance, there was one road, the upper road at Chatham Barracks, between the men's living blocks and the parade ground, which was down on a lower level, with three great big staircases, sets of stone steps down to them. And on the top of each of these stone steps was one of the barrack guard. And the barrack guard were just like policemen are in ordinary day. And they all had whistles. Now, if you came from the block that you lived in, the living block, and wanted to get across the prairie, you must run. You must not walk. Going across the parade ground, you must not walk, you must run. And the guys were there, blowing the whistle, pick up the double there. And they'd have you on a chance before you knew. Now, why? Why run? things like that.
Can you give me any other examples like that?
There was a daily routine. You're falling in on the parade ground in the morning. You had prayers as usual, just reading the prayers out. The chaplain came up onto the middle steps, the center steps, and read the prayers out. And then you were all falling, given your different jobs. Now, you never knew what job you was going to get, because somebody would come along and say, can I have so many hands for the sick bay? I want them to do something there. The padre would want somebody to go and clean up the church. Somebody on the sports ground would want somebody to go and mow the football pitch. And you didn't know what you were going to get. And so every day it was different. And you got the most boring jobs, like sweeping up and painting white lines, painting the edges of the pavements and this sort of thing, cleaning brasswork somewhere, or cleaning windows. Oh, you didn't know what you were going to get. And it was boring, because all you were living for was to get ashore that night, if you lived ashore, if you were, as I had my wife down there.
So, to what?
You had a card. Now, this was, we used to call it a breathing license. And all it was a station card with your name and your number and what your job was, your seaman or what mess you were in. Now, everywhere you went, you must have that card. If you went to a job, say, in the morning, you're given a job, all right, you go down to the gymnasium and you're going to be cleaning up, or down the swimming bath, or anywhere else. You handed your card into an office and you couldn't get that back until you were marched back from the job you were doing to the regulating office and you were given your card back and you went to dinner. Now, without that card, you couldn't do a thing, and so you couldn't do any skiving. You must have that card with you, and all the time you were working, you didn't have it with you. You couldn't do anything. Oh, it was regulations all the time.
To what extent did this, these things, the general tone of life, the general quality of life in barracks, to what extent did it relate to the actual staff who were permanently attached to the barracks?
Oh, a lot of it attached to them, of course. We call them barrack stanchions. And we could never understand why a man could spend a year or more in barracks without going to sea, when we seemed to come in, have a little spot of leave, and they were drafted straight out again to another ship and away again for 3 years. And so the barrack stanchions were not very popular. And they, I suppose, wanted to consolidate their position in the barracks, you see, and so they employed the big stick method on everybody else.
Can you give me any examples of the big stick method?
Oh, the guards, for instance. You know, another guard was the elite of the barracks, the barrack guard. They had an officer in charge and petty officers, a chief petty officers, leading seamen and guards. I know I was in the guard myself later on. But they could impose their will on almost anyone. And if one of the barrack guards got you for anything, you were in trouble. They could even have you for having your hands in your pockets, having your cap on your back of your head, having your lanyard undone, or even your shoelace undone, or some silly thing like that. And it was the same when you went out on leave. You were inspected at the gate. The least little thing that was wrong with your uniform, even if your shoes were done up the wrong way, you could be sent back. Your laces had to be crossed. They weren't allowed to be crossed, crisscrossed. And there had to be a cross like that. And silly things like that. And these back extensions, the guard and the regulating staff, that's the jaunters and the crushers, they could make it very, very uncomfortable for you.
You gave me the impression earlier that one of the areas where they were particularly difficult was as regards uniform.
Yes, they were when you went in there, all your uniform had to conform. But when you were walking about, your uniform had to be just right. And particularly when you went on leave, you were inspected. And things like, for instance, you'd expect the officer to walk along the rank and just look at you and see if everything was all right. But when he went behind you, he'd turn your collar up, lift your collar up to see if it was marked with your name underneath and that sort of thing. he'd lift a collar up to see if your silk handkerchief was tied underneath the collar, because the sailor likes to be just the opposite, you know, he likes to do things his own way, and he likes to tie his silk in the front. So what they used to do, lift your collar, sling your silk over, tie it in the front and tuck the ends down, see. But it should have been tied at the back. And they'd do silly things. You couldn't tell the difference. Nobody could tell from looking at you whether your silk was tied at the back or the front. Oh, there's something.
Was there any graft as far as the backroom stanchions were concerned?
I say there was. I got to know about this later on because I got involved in it, not criminally, I say. But we had a catering staff in each block, which consisted of a chief writer, a PO writer, and I was just one of his minions, a sort of labourer. Now, they used to order all the food from ashore, all the fresh food. He used to order butcher's meat, eggs, bacon, stuff like that. And he would issue it to the galleys for cooking. The paymaster would make out the menu, you see. Now, I know that the private contractor, a butcher, used to supply beef, less so many pieces of beef. He'd supply pork, less a leg of pork, see. Now, you could never catch him because he delivered the stuff. And the chief writer would accept it and sign for it. But I've had to go ashore. Now, when you go ashore, will you call at the butcher's shop? He's got a parcel. Will you take it to my home? That was the leg of beef or the leg of mutton or the few pork chops that didn't come into the barracks. And this went on all the time. There were all sorts.
You may have put your finger on one of the reasons why they didn't want to go to sea. Making a good deal of it.
They did make a good deal of it.
In any other ways you could think of?
No, because I was involved in that.
Yeah.
But there was obviously a lot of smuggling went on. Tobacco and cigarettes in particular. But you see, tobacco is only half a crown a pound. That's in tins for cigarettes. Pipe tobacco was a little less, and the leaf tobacco was only 1 and 6 a pound. And if you could make up a prick of tobacco, you could get a good price for it ashore, and there was a lot of smuggling. And so they were very, very strict when you went out of that gate, you were always searched.
Were the barrack room stanchions amenable to bribes from the men?
I think there may have been, but I have no personal experience of that.
Fair enough. Right. After the working day was over in the barrack rooms, would you spend much of your off-duty time in the barracks?
Not if I had somewhere to go ashore. There was every facility in the barracks. I mean, there were, the swimming bath was open, you could go swimming. The gym was open, you could play games. The sports fields were open at the back. You could go and play football or whatever you liked. The canteen was open. You could go and sit down and have a cup of tea there, buy yourself a cup of tea and bum. Or even the bar was open and you could drink beer at certain times. There was also frequently concerts put on by civilian people, you know. There was quite a lot going on in the barracks. And then there were other things that people were interested in, you see. The people who were getting ready to go to Olympia for the field guns crew and that were all doing the practice in the evenings, you know. And the athletes were all doing the practice. The runners and the jumpers and all that were all doing the practice on the sports field. So there's plenty to get on with.
It sounds as if, though, you're... a lack of affection to barrack room life was such that you would get off at every opportunity.
Yes, I would.
Yes.
I didn't like staying in barracks.
Well, tell me a bit about Chatham during this period. That's 1923 we're talking about. What was life like for a seaman in Chatham?
I suppose it was better than Malta, for one thing, but there were quite a lot of amenities ashore. There were dances and... of course, there were places like the Salvation Army. And I don't know that there was certainly not an Aggie Westerns there at Chatham. But there was a Fleet Club.
That was a rest home as well, was it?
Yes, you could buy a bed there, you see.
What sort of facilities did the the Fleet Club and the Salvation Army rest home provide?
They provided cubicles with beds in them, and you could book a bed for the night and stay there and have your breakfast there in the morning, as usual, but not much else. Not much. Salvation Army, not much else.
You could eat there?
Oh, yes, you could eat there. You could buy a meal there, and you could have your letters delivered there if you like. And you could take your friends there, civilian friends, if you had any, girlfriends. No, I'm not talking about anything out of the way now, but decent girlfriends you could take them there.
Which of the rest homes in Chatham did the men prefer?
I think the Fleet Club. They didn't prefer the Salvation Army much. It was a bit too stodgy.
Why did they prefer the Fleet Club?
Well, I mean, it was a bit more lively. I don't suppose anybody think of taking a girl into the Salvation Army, sitting in heaven and lunch with them or tea or anything.
Yeah.
The Salvation Army was regarded more as a sleeping place. You booked you got a good bed there, you got a little cubicle. They were pretty strict with you. You don't bring any beer in or anything like that, you see. Well, the other places you could probably take a bottle of beer in with you, drink it in your cubicle.
And in Chatham itself, what were the main centres, apart from the rest homes, where sailors used to congregate?
Oh, the pubs and the theatres.
Any particular pubs?
No, I never drank, so I don't know. I never went into pubs. I never had anything to do with pubs. But that's where most of them went, I guess. But I used to go to the theatre.